Some financial relief is on its way to Wisconsin farmers. It's part of a new coronavirus aid program. We're talking about that and more here on The Morning Show. I'm Keeley Boltina in for Kate Archer-Kent. This is the State Capitol Report, and you have a line to the person leading our state's Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. 1-800-642-1234 is the number. What questions do you have for the newly appointed secretary? What do you think should be the top priorities at Wisconsin's Department of Ag and Trade and Consumer Protection? What should the department's leader know about how it affects your life? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. You can also send your experiences, your questions to ideas@WPR.org. Randy Romanski is the secretary designee of Wisconsin's Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. He was appointed by Governor Tony Evers earlier this month, and he previously served as interim secretary since November 2019. Secretary Romanski, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on this morning.
Today, farmers can start applying for a new coronavirus aid program. They could receive between $1,000 and $3,500 based on last year's income. What do you know about this program?
Well, great timing for your call today. Governor Evers has made $50 million available in direct payments to Wisconsin farmers through the Wisconsin Farm Support Program. Eligible farmers are able to receive between $1,000 and $3,500, which is a sliding scale based on gross income. The application period, which is an online application, opened this morning at 7 a.m. So it's open now, and it will be open until June 29th. So we encourage farmers who have been impacted by COVID-19 to contact the Department of Revenue online and apply for this funding.
Who may be eligible for this aid?
Eligible farmers are those with gross income between $35,000 and $5 million based on their 2019 tax filings.
So why is there an income cap then at $5 million?
With the funding that was made available by the governor, we, the department and the Department of Revenue, met with the governor's office and representatives of farm organizations in the state of Wisconsin. And the goal was to try to make this funding as meaningful as possible for as many farms as possible. Wisconsin has a lot of farms, and $50 million is a lot of money, but it was really important, as we heard from the farm organizations, that they wanted to try and get these dollars out to farmers to help. And so we had to make some difficult decisions about parameters for where the funding went. But the goal is, and I think it was identified by the governor and supported by the farm organizations, to try to get as many farmers engaged in this as possible.
And you said an income maximum for this aid, and yet farmers of all commodities are eligible here, even though there are some, right, some kinds of farming that is that are under more stress right now than other areas of the industry. Had you thought about narrowing that?
Well, what we've found is that there's a lot of stress throughout agriculture in Wisconsin and elsewhere. So the goal was to have this program be inclusive, so everything from ginseng and cranberries, to potatoes and vegetables, to dairy to livestock, all of which have seen some challenges, were engaged in the discussion about how to distribute the funding, and as a result, we'll be able to be eligible for some of this funding.
We're talking with Randy Romanski, the newly appointed secretary of Wisconsin's Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. And you can ask him your question by calling 800-642-1234. What do you want the secretary to know about what agriculture is like for you? Do you have comments about how Wisconsin should handle trade? Maybe you see some red tape getting in the way. How do you think that the department could better offer state regulations that work for you? 800-642-1234 is the number that you can call now while we talk with the secretary. And Secretary Romanski, how has this pandemic exposed flaws or weaknesses in Wisconsin's food supply chain? Because there are some people who are hurting right now.
There are. Wisconsin farmers were already subject to several years of low farm gate prices. There have been disturbances in international trade patterns, and we've had some very unpredictable weather. At the end of last year, there was optimism heading into 2020 because the farm prices had stabilized a little bit and had increased, and there were some newly inked trade deals that we were hoping would be helpful in reestablishing international marketplaces that had been disrupted. COVID-19 hit, and nobody could have foreseen the impact that that had on Wisconsin, the world actually, but the Wisconsin's agriculture economy. What it identified is that there were some immediate disturbances in the supply chain. So in Wisconsin, we're fortunate to be surrounded by farms and fields that feed us, and that food goes internationally. But when there is a substantial disruption in the supply chain that alters buying patterns, and as a result, in some cases and in many cases, Wisconsin farmers didn't have any place to go with their product. We initially saw it with dairy farmers having to dispose of fluid milk because of the disturbance in the supply and demand chain. Eventually, as meat processing facilities were impacted by either temporary or partial or in some cases full closure for a period of time, that there was a disruption in the supply chain there. The livestock, the animals that were going to those processing plants didn't have some place to go immediately. And so that caused a disturbance in the supply chain as well.
So what can your department do to lessen those challenges?
We believe the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection is best served by being a resource to the citizens of the state of Wisconsin and the industries that we're engaged with. One of the things that our agency did at the initial outset of COVID-19 was to work in partnership with our stakeholders to connect Wisconsin producers and high-quality products with people in need. And that's taken many forms. The important thing for us to do was to make sure that we were communicating regularly with stakeholders in the industry, try to identify where the department could be a resource and what potential federal opportunities might exist to help address some of those challenges. So it's taken a variety of forms. In some cases, our agency has advocated for assistance to farmers, and that would take the point of funding and programs available to farmers. And back on April 1st, the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection contacted Secretary Perdue and asked him to make a substantial commitment to purchase commodities that would keep the supply chain moving, but also provide much-needed food to the food insecure. USDA has followed up with a program that they are tweaking just a little bit now, but those are some examples of what our agency has done. The other thing that we've done is we've identified gaps in the supply chain is we've worked to try to find a home for Wisconsin-produced products. And a good example of that
is Secretary Romanski, let's pause there. We'll come right back to it. Our guest is Randy Romanski. He's Secretary Designee of the State Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. And you have a line to him at 800-642-1234. I'm Keeley Boltina. You're listening to the State Capitol Report here on the Ideas Network. Thanks for being with us on the Ideas Network. This is your State Capitol Report here on The Morning Show. I'm Keeley Boltina. We're talking with Secretary Designee Randy Romanski. He leads Wisconsin's State Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. And there's a line for you at 800-642-1234. What do you want the secretary to know about your experience in Wisconsin agriculture? Maybe you're worried about scams. What should the state's role be in preventing scams and cracking down on those? 800-642-1234, or you can email ideas@wpr.org. Secretary Romanski, you were just talking about filling gaps when it comes to the supply chain. And one of the big things that we were paying a lot of attention to during this pandemic is the meatpacking industry. They drew criticism. There were calls for investigations as we saw COVID-19 outbreaks develop in Wisconsin factories and across the country. Do we need to provide greater oversight of that industry?
Thanks, Keely. Well, one of the things that we've identified through COVID-19 is that there is a clear understanding that everybody wants safe food and a safe workplace. The state inspects some meat processing plants, and the federal government inspects some meat processing plants. And I think it's important, no matter who is doing those inspections, that that it's done safely. So I think there are important steps in place that need to be followed. The CDC, OSHA have standards that need to be followed, and the expectation is that will happen.
After those outbreaks, what is your department doing to prevent more spread in other parts of the food supply chain, like large dairy farms or vegetable fields?
Well, the important thing to remember is that the State Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection has a regulatory function, and the regulatory function is primarily ensuring that the food safety, the quality of the food that's produced in those facilities. Standards for the plants or the operation is generally set by occupational health standards, which is not something that's under the control of the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. However, we do have frequent communication with our stakeholders, including the livestock meat processing industry. But we've worked with others within our stakeholders, and we were able to provide about 60,000 masks to some of our stakeholders as part of supplies that Governor Evers was able to make. So we've distributed those masks to some of our partners. And of course, we have encouraged everybody to follow the guidelines that have been established about, wherever possible, making sure that there's social distancing and safety measures in place.
You've been interim secretary of the department since Senate Republicans rejected the governor's appointment of Brad Pfaff. Why do you want to stay in the department's top post?
Well, I'm really honored that Governor Evers has asked me to stay on as secretary designee. I believe it's important to serve the state of Wisconsin, and I believe the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection has an outstanding connection with the citizens of the state and the industries we serve. I believe state government and the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection should be and is a resource to those citizens and those stakeholders. And I really appreciate the opportunity to serve, and I thank the governor for his trust in me.
How did the Senate, essentially firing your predecessor, how does that shape your view of accepting this appointment?
It didn't. The governor asked me to serve in interim capacity, which I've done. I've gladly done to serve the agency and the state. I accepted the designation. This formalizes that commitment, and I look forward to the opportunity to lead the agency. I also look forward to working with everybody, including the legislature. Confirmation is part of the process. I look forward to the confirmation process. We have regular communication with legislators, and we'll continue to do so. So I know confirmation is part of the process, but my focus has been on focusing on my job, which is working with the great team that we have at the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection and serving as a resource and advocating for Wisconsin agriculture. So I look forward to doing that as we move forward.
We're talking with Randy Romanski, who's the newly appointed Secretary of the State Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. It is one of the guests we have this morning on the morning show's State Capitol Report. And we are we're looking at a lot of different aspects of the department that is broad running. And I do wonder, Secretary Romanski, you know, when it comes to the consumer protection part of your work, as the pandemic arrived, the department made a point to warn people about new scams or price gouging. So what is the agency doing to stop abuse?
Keely, thanks for that question. Sometimes when people talk about the Department of Agriculture, they forget about that it's the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Consumer protection is and will continue to be one of our key activities that we do in, for the citizens of the state. We've seen a variety of scams related to COVID-19. Many of them are very similar to tactics that scammers have been using for a while. You know, here are some examples. Government impersonators are posing as contact tracers, trying to gain personal information. Health scams now take the form of companies selling products that they claim cure or prevent COVID-19. Those are just a couple of examples. But there's a number of ways people can protect themselves from these scams, and some of these are true of any scam that might come along. But know who you share your information with. Don't provide sensitive information when someone you don't recognize reaches out to you. Instead, reach out to through some sort of trusted method to verify you're in contact with the right organization. Another thing to do, store and dispose of personal information securely. Ask questions before deciding to share your personal and financial information. And make sure you have appropriate security in your computers and other electronic devices. Ask questions. It's your right. It's your ability to ask questions. And when people are contacting you for things that might sound too good to be true, they probably are too good to be true. So ask those tough questions. Use the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection website. Call our Division of Consumer Protection if you have questions, or if you have a complaint, please call the CP hotline.
We'll make sure those are listed on our website, WPR.org/mornings. And we've got Ron from Madison who wants to make a point here. Hi, Ron.
The very important thing that agriculture must do is to cut the greenhouse gas emissions, which make climate chaos change accelerate. And we also must cope with the changes that the climate is causing in other things, such as flash flooding, like happened 22 months ago in Dane County. Oh boy, earlier flooding up in Vernon County washed out some of the public law 466 reservoirs that store the flash flood water and let it out slowly.
Ron, I'm going to jump in here because we just have a few minutes left with the secretary. I want to make sure he has a chance to respond to the idea that the Department of Agriculture, as Ron says, should be thinking about climate change and emissions.
First of all, Ron, thanks for the question. Keely, my initial response to that is Governor Evers has appointed a climate change task force. Agriculture is a strong part of the membership of that task force. I am on the task force. There are also four other individuals from the world of agriculture in Wisconsin that are part of that discussion, including farmers. So farmers will continue to have a voice and in that discussion. The other thing I would say is Governor Evers declared 2019 the year of clean drinking water, and there were a variety of proposals that he proposed and that were also included in the Water Quality Task Force that met substantially over the course of last year. And we look forward to identifying the things that we can implement from that as well.
With just a minute to go, what do you think your biggest challenge is right now with this department?
I think continuing to work with the industry as we respond to and recover from COVID-19. Our view on how the agency should approach things is that we are a resource to the citizens of the state. It's important for us to convene with a purpose and make resources available to Wisconsin. And we invite everybody to the table. Everybody's got a seat at the table. We just ask them to come ready to work and share in the responsibility as we move forward together.
Secretary Romanski, thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you, Keith. I appreciate it.
Randy Romanski is the secretary designee of the State Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. He was appointed by Governor Tony Evers earlier this month, and he served as interim secretary since November of 2019. Up next is news, then our state capitol report continues with Wisconsin Attorney General Josh Call. What questions do you have for the state's top lawyer and law enforcement official? What do you want him to know? Call 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. I'm Keely Boltina. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. Protests against police brutality spread across the country after video showed a Minneapolis officer killing George Floyd, a black man. Demonstrators want racial justice and police reforms. We're talking about it now with Wisconsin's top legal counsel, Attorney General Josh Call. This is the State Capitol Report. I'm Keely Boltina in for Kate Archer-Kent, and you are part of this discussion. What questions do you have for Wisconsin's Attorney General? What do you think the top priorities should be at our state's Department of Justice? What do you want the state attorney general to know? Call 800-642-1234. You can also tweet us at WPR Mornings. Josh Call is the attorney general of Wisconsin. Attorney General, welcome back to the morning show.
Thanks for having me again, Keely.
How should Wisconsin leaders respond to the killing of George Floyd and the call by demonstrators to improve police practices?
I think there are several things we can do, both with respect to our criminal justice system and more broadly. The murder of George Floyd was horrendous. It is not conduct that should ever be engaged in by law enforcement. And I was really glad to see a lot of people in the law enforcement community come out and condemn that murder when it happened. And we've seen a dialogue around the state and around the country about systemic racism that has resulted from the protests we've seen over the last several weeks and the need to make real progress in working to dismantle systemic racism. I recently made several proposals that are meant to be a starting point for the discussion about what we can do to improve. I'd like to see expanded community policing so we can work to improve relationships between law enforcement officers and people in the communities where they work. I'd like to see more funding for training on de-escalation, critical incident training, implicit bias, and cultural competency. I also think there are reforms we can make to our criminal justice system, like reforming our bail system. I'd like to see a hate crime hotline funded here in Wisconsin. I'd like to see disciplinary records being prohibited from being sealed when an officer leaves one agency and goes to another. And then on top of that, I think giving civil rights enforcement authority to the Wisconsin Department of Justice can help ensure that we are living up to our civil rights laws.
What kind of authority do you want to enforce civil rights within your department? What power would you prefer to have?
Right now, roughly half of the state departments of justice around the country have broad civil rights enforcement authority. In Wisconsin, we don't. We have very limited ability to enforce civil rights laws at our State Department of Justice, and I would like to see that expanded. And that would allow us to investigate potential civil rights violations in a variety of different contexts. So, for example, if you had a city government that was engaging in practices that violated our civil rights laws in the way it went about hiring, that's something that our Department of Justice could be empowered to investigate. If you, in the private sector, you had companies engaging in practices that violated civil rights laws in housing, for example, we've got some Fair Housing Act enforcement authority, but in a lot of other contexts, we don't have that enforcement authority. And if you had a police department that was engaging in a pattern and practice of violations, I believe that our Department of Justice should have the authority to look into that as well.
You also mentioned more money for training and de-escalation, and we can talk about that. And yet, we're hearing demonstrators, some of them calling on leaders to defund police, really take dollars away from police budgets, put those to other services like mental health providers or schools. How do you resolve those two issues?
Yeah, first, I think what's important to note about police funding is we have seen some cuts that have been really harmful to law enforcement community relations. So in Milwaukee, for example, there were some very successful community police programs that have lost funding, and that has had a negative impact. And so investing in the kinds of programs that help build strong relationships like community policing, I think is a benefit to law enforcement, and I think it's going to be something that a lot of people who are concerned about disparities in the justice system also will want to see. Because as we build those strong relationships, I think you increase the odds that interactions between law enforcement and people in their communities are positive ones. But what I also hear is serious concern, which I agree with, about significant disinvestment in social services programs, whether it's mental health programs, funding for schools, and we do need to fund those kinds of programs. And there are a lot of ways we can make progress in that, and I think it's critical that we do. We've seen police officers have to fill a lot of those gaps. So if there's somebody who is in a mental health crisis, for example, and there's concern that that person is a danger to themselves or to others, it's law enforcement officers right now who are responding to that call in most places. And if we can find a way to fund the kind of social services that allow a mental health professional to respond in those kinds of circumstances, I think that's something that everybody supports, including people in law enforcement.
We're talking with State Attorney General Josh Call about the recent demonstrations against police brutality and how Wisconsin leaders could respond. We're taking your calls at 800-642-1234. What do you want to say about the protests across America and here in Wisconsin? What is it like between police and your community? Tell us about that relationship. You have a line to the State Attorney General at 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. When officers use deadly force here in Wisconsin, the Department of Justice, your department, often called to investigate as an outside agency. Mr. Attorney General, those investigations rarely result in charges against officers. Why is that?
Well, there are a lot of different reasons, but so our role is to investigate those shootings in cases where an agency asks us to investigate. Wisconsin has a law that requires that investigations into officer-involved deaths be conducted by an outside agency. A lot of agencies use the Wisconsin Department of Justice, and other agencies have agreements with different police departments. So our role is to investigate those, and we do extremely thorough, professional, and timely investigations. But then the decision about whether charging is made by the district attorney in the relevant jurisdiction. So the decision about whether to charge is not made by the Wisconsin Department of Justice, but by DAs around the state. The standard that that people look to in making that charging decision is whether the use of force was reasonable under the circumstances. And DAs make that call based on the facts of a particular case. Now, I will say it is rare that you have a case that is like the George Floyd case in that you have clear evidence on video of exactly what happened. The facts are usually less clear, and I think that impacts charging decisions. But that being said, there have been cases where prosecutions have been brought, including in Milwaukee County, for example. And I think it's critical that we have accountability if the law is broken.
if the evidence is one of the barriers to, you know, any charges being filed, because we have to dig deeper, would you support changing state law either to narrow the use of deadly force or to, you know, mandate more first person evidence gathering, things like body cameras statewide?
First, I think that we should work towards having every police officer in the state of Wisconsin equipped with a body camera. I think that that's an important accountability mechanism. And I think, you know, a lot of police officers right now have body cameras, and we're making progress in expanding that. But I think every officer should. I think it is worth taking a look at the use of force standards. One of the things that one of the challenges we have right now is that there's not a consistent statewide use of force policy. Agencies are required to have a policy and to make that policy public. But beyond that, each agency can set different standards for itself. And I think one of the things we ought to look at is whether we should have a statewide standard.
So it sounds like you could support changing state laws on either of these issues.
Yeah, with body cameras in particular, the challenge that departments face is that it's a significant expense. And so some agencies have not adopted mandatory body cam use for all officers. So figuring out how we fund that and make that happen financially is part of the solution. With use of force standards, I think we need to bring people together. I think we need to listen to people, including people who are involved in protests, so we can bring voices together on this and we can assess exactly how we can go about making changes that are going to work to dismantle systemic racism and work to improve the interactions that we're seeing between law enforcement officers and people in the communities. While those interactions are overwhelmingly positive, when you have negative interactions, it is something that has a big impact, and we've got to work to figure out how we can reduce those.
We're talking with Wisconsin's Attorney General Josh Call, and there's a line for you at 800-642-1234. What response do you want to hear from elected leaders in Wisconsin as we are processing what to do in the wake of George Floyd's death and thinking about how police interact with communities and what that relationship should look like? What legislation do you want drafted right now to change how Wisconsin handles these sorts of instances? What do you think should be the top priorities at Wisconsin's Department of Justice? 800-642-1234. Email your thoughts, your questions to us at ideas@WPR.org. Or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. The state's attorney general stays with us here on the morning show. This is your State Capitol Report, and you're listening to the Ideas Network. Protests against police brutality are spreading around the country. We are talking with Wisconsin's attorney general, who's the state's top lawyer. The person in that role advocates for the public's interest within and beyond state lines. And AG Josh Call is with us. This is the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Keely Boltina, and it's the State Capitol Report, where you have an open line to people in public office. Give us a call at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have for Wisconsin's attorney general? What would you like him to know? Again, that number, 800-642-1234. Mr. Attorney General, do you support Assembly Bill 1012? That's the use of force bill that Governor Tony Evers is urging lawmakers to pass in the wake of George Floyd's death.
I think there are a lot of good ideas in that bill, and we talked earlier about whether we should have a statewide standard for use of force, and I think that's something we need to be taking a look at in response to the murder of George Floyd. What I would like to see is bringing together people from a variety of different areas, from law enforcement, people who are protesting, others who have expertise in how we can reduce officer-involved shootings. And I'd like to hear from those people and engage in a dialogue about this. I'm open to that idea, and I'd like to see some further discussion about this so we can figure out what policy is going to be most effective in working to reduce these shootings.
Yeah, that bill requires police to ensure use of force policies follow principles, including preserving life and using deadly force as a last resort. How much training on de-escalation practices should we require of police officers here in Wisconsin?
The way that training is set up right now in Wisconsin is that officers are trained to use the least amount of force possible to control the situation that they're in. So in that sense, de-escalation is baked into the training that happens. But I'd like to see more funding for training specifically on de-escalation, on the benefits of de-escalation, and on why we need to be doing it. There need to be, when you have it as part of the broader training, I think that clearly helps set a standard. But having training that specifically focuses on this issue, I think also can help us promote de-escalation and encourage more positive interactions between law enforcement and police.
What about on the issue of chokeholds or kneeling on people's necks? Should all Wisconsin officers be prohibited from using those maneuvers?
I do support banning the use of chokeholds. Neither chokeholds nor kneeling on somebody's neck is something that is trained in Wisconsin. And so those are tactics that shouldn't be used anyway. But having an outright prohibition, I think makes sense.
We're talking with State Attorney General Josh Call, and we're taking your calls at 800-642-1234. We want to welcome Paula in La Crosse now. Hi, Paula.
Oh, hi. I just wanted to comment on a good outcome, and I think with your comment regarding your talking about de-escalation. I have a 29-year-old son, and he has some mental health issues, and was in his place of in employment and made some threatening remarks. And this happened about a month ago. But we were called at our home because his good friend got a call that he was threatening to kill himself. And I have to say, our local police in the area we live from, I don't know if you want me to say it, but the city of La Crosse, La Crosse County, the village of Holman, they did an excellent job in coordinating together. And they actually wanted us as his parents, even though he's 29, to assist in de-escalating the situation. And their primary concern, we actually met a couple blocks away from his apartment, and their primary concern was to de-escalate the situation, and if we could do it as his parents to help keep him safe and obviously the safety of others. But, you know, it turned out well. He did get charged with disorderly conduct, but, you know, it could have turned out much, much, much worse.
Yeah. Paula, thank you for sharing that story of, a positive interaction that you had and a good demonstration, Mr. Attorney General, of what can happen when we do have police and communities working together.
That's right. And, you know, I touched on this before, but one of the issues that I had been working on, and I know that a lot of law enforcement officers around the state care a lot about, is reforming our emergency detention system in Wisconsin. This is a system for when an individual is a danger to themselves or others. Right now, it is law enforcement that is called to respond to that. And often there's a binary choice that law enforcement has. Either somebody goes into emergency detention, which means they get transported, they're taken into custody, and then they often go to Winnebago Mental Health Institution in Winnebago County for people across the state, which means they're in the back of a squad car, or they're not detained, in which case then the officer essentially has to leave the situation. They can encourage the person to take positive steps, but that's it. Having an intermediary option where we have mental health professionals respond to those sorts of situations can help lead to, I think, de-escalation in some of those situations and can help produce better outcomes. It's an example of how investing in some social services can help people who are going through that mental health crisis and can also reduce what can be a challenging interaction between law enforcement and members of the community.
Separate from steps that require action by the legislature or by the governor, what can the State Department of Justice do on its own to make our justice system more equitable?
There are a number of things that we are working to do and that we're going to keep working to do as we move forward. It was reported over the weekend that we began collecting use of force data earlier this year. Previously, that hadn't been done by the Wisconsin Department of Justice. But with that data, we can help inform the policy debate about use of force. Secondly, we work to investigate officer-involved shootings and officer-involved death cases, and we're going to continue to investigate those thoroughly, professionally, and in a timely fashion so that DAs who are making charging decisions around the state can make those decisions in a way that is informed as possible. We also oversee training and standards in Wisconsin. The standards for law enforcement training are set by the LESB, but we have a training and standards division that works to implement those. And one of the things we're looking at now is whether there are changes we can make in the training that we provide to help make sure that we are working to improve the interactions that law enforcement has with people in the community where they work.
The department also administers millions of dollars in grants for police agencies and nonprofits. Could you follow this up with money for things that align with a better system?
We do that. We do administer a variety of different grant funds in Wisconsin. And I think one of the things that is important as we look at those is if there is a role to play in promoting better policies and greater equity in our system with those grant funds, that we do that. You know, many of the grant funds we administer are based on set criteria, and so we have to administer the grants pursuant to those criteria. But promoting the kinds of policies that are going to be helpful to law enforcement community interactions, I think, is important. One of the things we advocated for in the last budget was that some of the grant funds we have be specifically targeted towards community policing. I'd like to see more of that kind of grant funding going forward.
All right. Thank you for your time. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Josh Call is the Attorney General of Wisconsin, and we've been talking about how recent demonstrations against police brutality are affecting how we're talking about it and how Wisconsin leaders could respond to those. Just ahead, we have a closer look at the history of American police forces and how the work of officers has evolved over time. I'm Keely Boltina. This is the State Capitol Report. It's the morning show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.